Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
From Dartmouth Hitchcock, imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
And from Granite State College, offering diverse bachelor's and graduate business degree programs online. Designed to help working adults advance. Granite State College, where quality matters. More information and registration at granite.edu.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Do teenagers still read books? Many adults would guess no, given that today's teens seem to spend countless hours with their eyeballs glued to their phones. But ask those who work with young people directly, and they dismiss glum predictions about book-shunning teens. They'll tell you that, in fact, adolescents are reading, that some read broadly and deeply, and even that we're currently in a golden age of young adult fiction. Today in The Exchange, the truth about teen reading. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests in studio. Nancy Keene is here. She's the library media specialist at Runlet Middle School in Concord, a position she's held for 25 years. Nancy's also the author of many books on using children's literature in the classroom. And Nancy, it's really nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Michael Sullivan. He's director of the Ware Public Library. He's also a national speaker and writer on boys and reading, including the book Raising Boy Readers. And Michael Sullivan, it's really good to meet you. Thank you.
Oh, thanks. Glad to be here.
Also with us, Erin Moulton. She's the teen librarian in Derry, author of young adult novels herself, the titles which we will put on our website. And Erin, glad to have you. Thank you also for your time.
Thank you.
Well, here's the big question, folks. You know, in recent years, we've seen a lot of headlines about teens not reading, a lot of sighing, a lot of groaning about this. So the big question, do teens still read? And Erin, I'm going to throw that at you first.
Yes, they do, to make it an easy answer. But yeah, we see teens in the library for a lot of different reasons, but they do read a lot. And I think it is a factor of time for a lot of teens. I mean, they do have a lot on their plates. They're doing a lot of sports. They're maybe an honor society. But for free time and recreation, they do go back to the book.
Do you think that most adults would find that surprising?
Yes, because a lot of the times when people see teens, they are on, you know, their device. However, teens are sometimes in a little nook by themselves or at the library at school reading or hidden away reading. It's not, you know, sitting in the living room with the family necessarily.
So, what do you think, Michael?
Well, I think teens in general read probably a little bit more than their parents do. The more parents read, the more teens read. I'm more worried that the parents these days, that the adults in their teens' lives aren't reading as much, and that role modeling bit isn't as much a part of it. Erin talked about the hidden readers, and that's, I think, one of the biggest things. Kids read a lot more than we think they do because they don't tend to share their reading with us if they don't think we're readers as well.
Wow. So that's interesting. So before adults say, oh, these kids, they don't read, they need to look at whether they're reading or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to say that kids are hypersensitive to hypocrisy. They'll see it even when it's not there. And it's really counterproductive to tell a kid that reading is important if he's never seen you do it.
What do you think, Nancy?
I have to agree with Michael. I think there's a decline in reading, but I think it's a lot of it is the adult reading. I don't think you have a lot of adults reading and showing the kids that it's a cool thing to do or a good thing to do. I think as far as the kids are reading, I don't see a huge decline. They read in their own way. They get into books and they have their own fan fiction and their own way of looking at books that we may not understand.
Now, that's interesting. Give us a little more. Their own way. What is their own way?
They become very passionate about books. They, they obsess with the books. When you see like Twilight or the Harry Potter books, they don't just read it and put it aside and then read another one. They obsess over it and they start writing their own fan fiction about it. So, yes, they may not read as much, but I think they read more passionately.
And maybe more deeply. They engage more deeply with the material.
Absolutely.
You know, one of my kids told me recently that some super, super, super fans of Harry Potter actually had convinced the movie studio to let them write a prequel to Harry Potter. I mean, that's I may not get all the details on that right, but that's an example, I think, Nancy, what you're talking
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. They really do get into their own writing, which is, I think, is wonderful because reading is important, but so is writing. And I see a lot of kids writing their own fan fiction, their own extension of the book.
Okay, so for the uninitiated, Erin, you're going to have to explain what fan fiction is and why that's cool.
That is where you basically take a novel and then you write your own version of it, putting in new characters, new plot sequences, and you can share it on these places like Wattpad and fanfic.com, and kids love it, and they love any way of being in that world for a longer period of time.
That's interesting. So you close the Harry Potter book, mm-hmm. and you say, oh, I already miss, you know, that whole fantasy world, so I'm going to continue it by writing my own version of that?
Right, and I run a teen writers group at the library, and sometimes kids will bring their own work, or they'll bring fan fiction, or they'll kind of give a nod to some of their favorite work, so they'll, take a little plot twist from one of their favorite books or pull in a character with their name slightly changed and put it in their own work.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, the number again for you to join us, whether you are a teenager or the parent of a teen or just have your own observations, all are welcome at 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Here's the question we're asking today in the exchange. Do American teenagers still read? 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. So, Michael, here's another fear or myth or whatever that you hear, and I want your take on whether this is fact or fiction. That 25 years ago, a child who didn't like reading would become a teen who didn't like reading, who would become an adult who didn't like reading. That's one thing. Today, the fear is the child who does read a lot will become the teen who doesn't because of digital distractions. So again, fact or fiction?
Partly fact, partly fiction. Certainly an awful lot of good readers in third, fourth grade stop reading. That trend is as clear as can be. As to why, I think we make the assumption that it's the technology that's doing it. And technology certainly has a part in it, but technology can also open doors to new kinds of reading. What's far more important is the pressure that we put on kids for reading. Up until about third, fourth grade, kids are learning how to read. It's a new experience for them. It's an exploration, and it's something that adults do with them. It's a low-pressure, low-stress kind of thing. I've worked my entire career with troubled readers, and boy, somewhere around third grade and going into fourth grade, they just tend to hit a wall, and it's because we change how they interact with reading. They stop learning to read. They start reading to learn, and suddenly it becomes very important what level you're reading at, what type of thing you're reading. Is it good reading? Is it bad reading? Is it too low? Is it too high? All of which is tied to kind of our educational atmosphere these days and has absolutely nothing to do with becoming a reader.
Wow. So like measuring, judging, categorizing, you're saying uh-uh.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we just passed a very important moment in time about 2 weeks ago. If you were a child who entered kindergarten right after No Child Left Behind became the law and you stayed with your class.
2002.
Yep. Congratulations. You graduated from college last week. We've raised an entire generation of kids that know nothing but test and punish. And I think that's helped to make that drop off at third and fourth grade even worse than it ever was.
Wow. And Nancy, your experience is so interesting because you've got kids at the middle school who enter as kids still. They're 11 years old. They exit at 14, definitely as teenagers. So what changes do you see over that time period?
What I've noticed is that the sixth graders usually come in as readers. They love reading. They're willing to try different genres. You know, it's not all fantasy. I usually can get them to read something else because I'm a real proponent of independent reading for pleasure. But by the eighth grade, they have other commitments. They have sports. They have peer pressure. They have a lot of things coming at them. And they really don't have the time or the desire that they do in the elementary or in sixth grade. They still read. They absolutely still read in eighth grade. But they are having competing things going on in their lives.
What do you think, Erin?
I just want to refer back to what Michael was saying about the standards and the measured reading. And I do recall at the library, for a while there, kids would come in and teens would come in and say, you know, I have a Lexile level of this. Can you find me a book? I have no idea how to give a reading recommendation based on Lexile level. So I
don't even know what a Lexile level
is. It's the measure of, and I don't know as much about it as I should, but it's how much vocabulary, how long are the sentences, and each of those factors give it a higher or lower Lexile level. So if they're reading, they know they're reading at a certain Lexile level, and they'll come in and look for a book within that Lexile level.
Oh, my goodness.
So then I would have to say, okay, well, wait, back up for a reference interview. What do you like to read? What is your favorite books to read? If you haven't read a book in a while, what's your favorite show to watch? Or what's your favorite game to play? And let me find something that's similar to that. And then we'll check and see if it's in the Lexile level. Because it's so hard to say, okay, well, your Lexile is 500. Here are all the books. That's not how we categorize the library.
Well, it isn't how you should categorize the library. So really, a concrete example of just what Michael was talking about. Go ahead, Nancy.
I just want to say that I really feel that in the school setting, because kids will come in and we use guided reading level. And they'll say, I'm at an N. And I'll say, you're not at an N. If this is independent reading for pleasure, you know, that's why I have picture books in my school library.
Now, hang on. At the middle school, you have picture books?
Absolutely. They're still important. The kids read them. They learn from them. It's independent reading for pleasure. So to me, if it's Captain Underpants or Little Women, I really don't care. As long as the kids are reading it and they're getting something out of it, they're reading it for pleasure and not because it's a school-assigned book. They have enough school-assigned books. They need to understand that they can read for pleasure, they can read up, and they can read down.
And there's no shame in reading down, even if you're an excellent reader.
Absolutely. I tell them, I've read all the picture books in this school. You know, so if I can read them, why can't the kids? And it does bother me when kids come in and return a book and say, my teacher said I can't read it because I have a higher reading level. Or they come in and say, my mom doesn't want me to read picture books or whatever. I just don't tell them. reading for pleasure means you choose the book you want to read. And that's what independent reading is all about.
Go ahead, Michael.
Hearing that, I go back to the stories. For one thing, Nancy's observations, I think just about every educator will share them, and they're backed up by a lot of very good research. And Stephen Krashen is the name of the gentleman who probably does the best work on this, did a book called Power of Reading that has all the evidence to back that up in case people don't believe that reading below your reading level helps. But whenever I get a parent that comes in and expresses this to me, I have a conversation with them. You know, what's your reading level? Well, you graduated from high school. You should be reading at the 12th grade level. I should be reading at the 18th, the master's level. Who do you like to read? Nora Roberts? Nora Roberts writes at the 6th grade reading level.
Right.
My favorite author is Robert Parker. He writes at the 5th grade reading level. So I read 13 years below my grade level. And I don't see a problem with that.
So pushing back a little bit on that then, Michael, if a kid does have strong reading skills, you know, high intellect, and he or she is consistently picking out Captain Underpants, and by the way, I love Captain Underpants and I've read all those books, you know, shouldn't they be kind of pushing themselves a little bit?
The question there is why, rather than simply reacting to it. Kids show a lot of stress in their reading, and there's your number one sign of stress. Consistently, unerringly reading way below your grade level, they're feeling uncomfortable about their reading somewhere down the line. Somebody is making them uncomfortable. It's really funny. Boys are known psychologically for always overestimating their ability to do anything, which is why they get hurt so much. The one area where consistently boys test out as having a lower opinion of their own skills than is true is in reading. And you just described the unsure reader, maybe 7th, 8th, 9th grade, who's feeling stressed out because people are pressuring him about his reading, and so he will not read anything but something 10 years below his grade level, something that he's read before, one genre exclusively. These are all signs of stress.
So what's the role, I'll turn to you first, Nancy, what's the role of the librarian, the teacher, the parent in pushing that teenager to say, okay, it's great that you're reading, you know, a picture book or a comic book, but you could also push yourself?
Well, I
are you guys saying don't push at all?
No. I think we do make suggestions. I don't know that we push, but we will make a suggestion. You know, gee, you've read all of those. Maybe you could try this. Do you think you'll like this? And I always, you know, give kids recommendations and give them a book. If you don't like it, bring it back. We'll find something else.
So you don't have to read
it. If it's for pleasure and it's independent, you do not have to read it. I don't always finish every book I start.
Yeah, me neither. I usually have the 50-page rule, and after 50 pages, yep, if I'm not interested,
I do the 50 first pages and then 10 back just to find out how it ends. But that's
go ahead, Erin. Yeah.
Yeah, I have the same way of doing it. I try not to pressure the kids at all. And that worked for me as a kid, too, because I read all the Goosebumps books. And I think there's a lot of kind of adult, you know, presence in reading, in what you're reading as a kid. And sometimes there's a little shame cast on what you're reading as a kid. So, you know, Goosebumps, that's not literary. Or what else? I loved the Babysitter's Club. That's not literary. But I loved them. And I read all of them. And then, you know what, later I read Shakespeare in sixth grade and Chaucer later. So I think it's okay to take the pressure off and let them just enjoy it for the love of reading. And then if they love reading, they're going to read other things as they pursue their interests. There's a book for everything.
Again, the number here in the exchange for you to join our conversation about teens reading and whether American teens do read these days. As we're hearing from our guests, they do. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Join us if you work with young people, if you're a parent, or if you're a teenager yourself. We'd love your comments and questions about teen reading today in the exchange. 1-800-892-6477. Again, send us an email, exchange at nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And by the way, the name of any book that comes up during our discussion will be put on our website. So we'll have some great resources there after the show, later in the day. Here's an email, all of you, that came in from Brenda, who says, thank you for this discussion. What I have often noticed as a college English professor is that many students continue reading almost exclusively young adult fiction, even into their 20s. What do we make of that phenomenon? Brenda, thank you for the email. And Erin, I'll turn to you first.
Yeah, there is a lot of evidence that shows that adults are reading YA literature. And that's absolutely true in our library as well. We do have a lot of adult patrons who come in looking for the young adult collection. I think it speaks to how modern and, you know, the content is in young adult literature. And just how wonderful it is.
I've read that more than one person says, we're in a golden age of young adult fiction. This is the best time ever for young adult fiction. Young adult fiction was, you know, crummy in the 80s and 90s, and Now it's really blossomed.
Right. Before, there wasn't really a young adult collection. It was more about, you know, the young people would read adult literature. But now we really do read young adult. We have a young adult collection in our libraries. We have young adult. We have people who are writing only young adult books. So it is in a heyday, and we can talk a little bit more about that maybe after the break.
Definitely. We will jump into that after a break. And I myself am in the middle of a young adult book right now. So thank you, Brenda, for the email. And we will continue in just a moment. We'll also start taking your calls at 1-800-892-6477. Stay with us.
on the latest Outside In podcast.
I started convulsing or spasming on the ground, and I couldn't even sit up.
What if you could get rescued from anywhere on the planet?
You know, it's like, we're going to die, we're going to die. Nope, we're going to make it.
But what happens when not everyone gets the same chance to be saved?
The difficulty obviously rises when affluence gives one person a better chance of survival than another person.
Download Outside In on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Do teenagers still read, despite the image of adolescence with their faces in their phones? Our guests say teens are reading, and in fact, that now is a great time for young adult fiction. What's your perspective, especially if you're a teenager yourself? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email. Tell us what you think. exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Michael Sullivan, Aaron Moulton, Nancy Keene, before we go to our listeners, let's just play around with this theme that I have heard from a lot of people. And Nancy, I'll turn to you next, that we are in a golden age of young adult fiction. What do you think?
Absolutely. There is so much out there that is being published now that appeals to not only the kids, but as Aaron said, the adults as well. And I think if you look at what movies are being made, they're being made from young adult literature. And I think that that's amazing. I think we're also in an era where we're trying to create more diversity in young adult literature, and having not only the literature reflect the child so they see themselves in the materials, but it's also a lens to see other people and to see how other people live.
So yeah. What sort of characterizes young adult literature today, Nancy? I want to hear from everybody on this, because there are a couple things, like you said, the attempt to reflect a diverse America, whereas young adult fiction 40 years ago maybe didn't do that so much, or young adults struggling with different situations, or seems to be more open to fantasy these days, and so on. I'd love to hear your thoughts on what signifies this sort of golden era of young adult fiction.
I think they are, the authors are taking on topics that are very important to young adults that they may not have seen 40 years ago in the literature. And I think, the whole idea that they are seeing themselves in the literature, that it is touching them somehow.
Do you want to jump in, Erin?
Yeah, just because, and Nancy's mentioning that we're talking about topics that haven't been talked about in the past, and that's definitely the case in young adult literature now. The authors are a lot more willing to tackle tough subjects. So for May was Mental Health Awareness Month, for instance, and I put out a display of all the books that had a theme of mental illness in it. So we were talking about anorexia, we're talking about schizophrenia, we're talking about bipolar disorder. You're pulling out all those titles from Ellen Hopkins and A.S. King and Matthew Quick. These are topics that do actually affect kids in real life. And so to see them in a book is really helpful for them to feel that they're not alone, to kind of problem solve a little with the character and have that non-judgmental book. It's not the same as the internet. You don't go on and then there are trolls running in to tell you exactly that you're wrong. You have just the solitude of the book. And I think that's a really important thing. And I think it's important that authors are tackling those subjects.
How do you, as an author yourself, Erin, approach this sort of golden age of young adult fiction? It's engaging, it's open, it's fast, it's diverse.
As a writer, mm-hmm. I think I've kind of evolved a little bit more recently as looking at, okay, be relevant. Talked about what the kids want to talk about. So in Chasing the Milky Way, I talk about mental illness. I tell people it's about, bipolar disorder, robots, and best friends. That's what this middle grade book is about. I have a nonfiction anthology I'm editing that's coming up in January called Things We Haven't Said, Sexual Violence Survivors Speak Out. And so it's all stories written by sexual violence survivors who experienced it as children and teens. So that this is a survivor anthology, and it's very relevant to a lot of people. Being relevant. Also, Nancy mentioned diversity. I also, as a writer, make sure I have more diverse characters in my books. so that I am reflecting the kids who are reading them.
Because this younger generation is said to be the most diverse generation in American history.
Exactly.
So you have to reflect that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
One of the other great things about Teen Lit, and one of the reasons I think so many adults are going down to it, is that plot plays such a big role in Teen Lit. The books tend to be short. They've got to move. You've got to be a strong plot writer to be an effective teen writer. And that's a lot of pressure. The teen writers that are working today and that are successful are so good. And a lot of the adult writers have sort of drifted away. You know, we've had the book club culture for the last... How long's Oprah been on the air? and that type of book really focuses on characters. Not that a plot book can't have great characters. And in fact, teen books, as you're hearing here, characters are such a huge part of it. But if the plot doesn't carry you, you'll never get to know the characters. And one of the reasons, one of the ways that Teen Lit gets away with that is by writing almost everything in series. Series just dominate Teen Lit these days. And that way you can drive a hard plot, and the characters can still come alive because they come alive over 3, 5, 9, 27 books and really give you a chance to get some depth. But the stories really drive, and that's why a lot of people, you don't need a 500-page book to tell a story. 150 pages might be just what you need.
Do you want to jump in again on that, Nancy?
I think the series thing is absolutely right on. Even when a book is published as a standalone, I'll have kids saying, where's the next one? You know, they expect something more.
Right.
And I think it's nice that you do have a chance to get to know them. And, you know, as I said before, kids, when they close the book, they don't necessarily want to get rid of that character. They don't want to leave anything. So it's nice when they have another series book to go to. And, you know, that's just the way it is in publishing right now, that most things are series. And if they start out not necessarily being a series, they usually can turn into one very easily. Yeah.
Again, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Today in Exchange, do teenagers still read? Turns out they do. But how they read and what they read is changing. 1-800-892-6477. Let's hear from you. Your questions and comments on this question we're asking, do teenagers still read? 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, let's go to our listeners. And Linda joins us from Loudoun. Go ahead, Linda. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to point out that we live in a portable society, and our devices are becoming really multi-use tools. So we're using our phones as phones, cameras, and in a lot of our cases, we're using it as our book, right? So we can load lots and lots of books on the Kindle app. We have large screen phones that are easy to read on. And so I think in the case of some of the teenagers that I know, and certainly my 14-year-old grandson, he has the Kindle app loaded, and sometimes he is reading. And when we're observing these kids on their devices, they are at times reading.
Thank you for the call. And, you know, it raises a question. Do kids read on their phones, or do they prefer, Nancy, I'll turn to you first, do they prefer paper?
I think the kids are preferring paper, but they will read electronic books. I know the publishers, everybody's trying to push the electronic books. And as an adult, I love putting the things on my Kindle, so I have 100 books at a time to look at. But the kids still prefer that up close and personal, sitting there with a paper book for the most part. I think when kids are on their phones reading, they may not be reading a fiction book, but they may be reading articles, they may be reading news, they may be reading other things. Again, it's what interests them. It's the individual, independent reading for pleasure, be it, you know, a newscast or a short story or whatever they're reading. Yeah.
What's your observation as a librarian, Erin?
I have the same observation. I think that primarily when they're on their devices, they're reading blogs or messaging with friends or checking social media. And this is just at the library specifically. And then, you know, I think there was a recent Pew study that did look at who was reading what on what. And primarily teens were still reading in print and reading more than adults.
That's interesting. And Nancy and I talked yesterday when she told me that teenagers still prefer paper books. I was surprised. A lot of adults I know are like Nancy, where they actually prefer their Kindles because they can take them anywhere and they're not lugging, you know, 10 books on vacation.
Right, yeah. I don't prefer the Kindle.
What do you think, Michael?
I'm a paper guy all the way myself, too. But the key here is that it's not an either or. It's fiction or nonfiction is not an either or. Print or electronic is not an either or. If an electronic device allows a teen to read 5% more than he was before he had that, if he's just filling in the holes when he's sitting at a bus stop or something, that 5% often makes the difference between being a casual reader and being an intense reader.
Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Linda, thank you for that one. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at nhpr. Exchange. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. So I want to ask you all about something, but approach it very carefully. And Michael, you first. You've done a ton of work on boys reading. The surveys that I have looked at show, no matter who conducted the survey, show that boys don't read as much as girls. What's your own observation on that?
I think that's absolutely true. We've got 30, 35 years worth of great research that shows that on average, boys don't read as much. Boys don't read as well, or at least they don't test out as well at reading as girls do. A lot of that, I think, is smoke and mirrors. A lot of it, I think, is when the sort of smoke gets in our eyes and we let it affect us.
And what do you mean by that?
Boys' brain development tends to start a little bit later than girls. There's a massive jump in brain development that happens in girls around 18 months to 2 years. That same brain jump begins with boys a good year later. And that development lags behind right up until they become full-fledged adolescents. Doesn't mean that boys' brains don't grow, just grow at, they grow at a different time. But we test kids at the same level, regardless of what their gender is. And there's 1,000 reasons why a fourth grader might read above and below their level, 1,000 reasons why their brain development may be at a different point than someone else's. And none of it matters because eventually, of course, most kids, their brain develops right into adulthood. But we put a lot of pressure on boys to read at an artificial level when their brain development doesn't match it. And again, it doesn't have any effect on their long-term ability or their long-term desire to become readers. If we let them read at their level and we acknowledge their reading and we take the pressure off, I think a lot of it goes away. But a lot of boys don't read because they don't think they're good readers.
And it gets back to that sort of definition, categorization, leveling, the story that Aaron told.
On top of the leveling, the things that a lot of boys like to read don't tend to get a lot of respect. Teen lit these days are changing that because, if nothing else, fantasy now gets a lot more respect than it used to. And it's always been something that appealed to struggling readers and boy readers and all kinds of readers. Fantasy is a great leveler.
So thank you, Harry Potter.
Oh, and you mentioned Rick Riordan during the break.
I am reading right now.
That's right. He picked up the mantle. One of the things that really shocked us in education about Harry Potter wasn't just how many poor readers started reading a ton. What really shocked us is when they finished the Harry Potter series, an awful lot of those kids just stopped reading again. We needed a second series, and nowadays authors don't just publish a series, they publish a series of series. Rick Riordan has 4 related series going on now, so that those kids never have to drop.
I want to hear, Aaron and Nancy, your thoughts, too, on this boy reading issue. But let's go back to our listeners for just a moment. And Kendra Lynn is calling from Manchester. Go ahead, Kendra Lynn. I apologize. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm 12, and I just want to agree with something you said about how sometimes reading levels can put pressure on kids, which makes them read lower levels. And sometimes it's a good thing because sometimes people need a break. And sometimes it's not the best thing, but sometimes people need challenges.
So, Kendra Lynn, do you have personal experience with this yourself? You were told you could read, quote unquote, better or worse than you were reading?
Not really. I've been told that I can read pretty high, but I enjoy higher level books, and sometimes I'm not supposed to read those because I can't understand some of the content that's happening. So sometimes I get a little mad because I can't read, and then what is at my level because I don't understand the content, but then I have to read something that's lower, but I might have already read it, so it might not seem as interesting anymore.
Well, Kendra Lynn, it's great to hear from you. Thank you so much. And thoughts, Nancy, out of what Kendra Lynn told us?
I would just suggest to her to try other books. If you haven't found something at your level that you can understand, try something different. There are all sorts of books out there. Ask for recommendations. We do have some really strong readers who come in and want to read the classics. But as you said, they may not understand some of the content because they don't have the background knowledge. But they could find other books at that reading level and just try to find something else. Don't give up. I don't think you will. But I think you need to try to find some other books.
Kendra Lynn, thanks so much for the call. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. So back to the boy-girl thing. And again, we've talked a lot about not putting readers or teens in boxes. But I wonder, Erin, what you think about this whole sort of books that appeal to boys, books that appeal to girls, books that appeal to both, and how you approach that as an author.
As an author? Well, as a librarian, I actually approach it in more often. So if a boy comes in looking for a book, I do it the same way with girls because I notice that younger people don't like to be stuck in gender categories quite as strictly. So I don't just say, oh, okay, you're a boy, I'm going to hand you this.
Yeah.
Even though that might have worked. What I usually do is a reference interview where I'll ask them what they last read that they loved. If they read a book recently that they didn't like, what their favorite game, if they're a gamer, what their favorite game is, if they love watching TV, what their favorite show is. I can find a book on any of these things, no matter what they tell me. I can find a book that is just like that and hand it to them. It's for me, it's more about finding out who that kid is and what they love to read, and then getting them the book that would suit their reading taste.
So you really look at them as people, not in these,
right,
you know, gender categories.
Right.
And just, and what do you love? What do you not like?
I do acknowledge that, you know, just as Michael is talking about that, you know, there is that gap there. But as far as finding them a book that they would like to read, I do it very specifically.
One librarian that I talked to a couple weeks ago said, since the library profession is largely female, librarians have to be careful about what they pick, not just books that will appeal to females. Also, if boys read less in general and girls read more, public libraries have limited budgets. You know, they're kind of going, okay, well, you know, fair or not, Nancy, I've got limited dollars. I want these books to be used, so I'm going to veer towards those books that would appeal to girls.
I think one thing, and it's, you know, I hate to say it, it's an overgeneralization, but girls will read pretty much anything. You know, so I don't think I need to have a big collection of chick lit. The girls will read Harry Potter. The girls will read, you know, the Percy Jackson books. So I don't find that I pick books necessarily by who it will appeal to. I use reviews. I use other librarians. I use lists. I use, you know, I try to find the best of the best for my kids because I do have a limited amount of money and I want the best for my students.
We will talk more in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, teen reading. Despite a lot of moaning about this topic, with adults convinced adolescents don't read at all, our guests say many teens today are still picking up books and reading widely and deeply, really connecting with certain authors and certain worlds. What's your take on this topic? 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And by the way, later today, we will put the names of any books that come up during this program on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. So if you hear about a book on the show and you want to check it out, we will have it up there as soon as we get a chance later today. Our guests are Michael Sullivan with the Ware Public Library, also a national speaker and writer on boys and reading. Erin Moulton's here, the teen librarian in Derry, and author of young adult novels herself, and Nancy Keene, library media specialist at Runlet Middle School in Concord. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. One more question, all of you, on this, you know, sort of what appeals to boys, what appeals to girls, and again, echoing what Nancy said, you know, you just want to find the best books for kids. Erin said that she tries to approach each teen as a person, not as a boy or a girl. But, Michael, the boys tend to check out more graphic novels. They love that genre. And some parents think, oh, that's a comic book. You shouldn't be reading a comic book. That's too babyish. What's your take on graphic novels? Is that just a dressed up way of saying comic book?
It is. And it's one reason we should really respect them. There's a whole generation of men out there who, if you ask them, what was the book that changed your life? It was a comic book. They read comic books when they wouldn't read anything else. And it's certainly true with a lot of kids. A lot of kids that won't read anything else for fun will pick up a graphic novel. It's also a great way of expanding the reading of kids who read a ton. You know, we heard from that 12-year-old who, you know, her reading level is strong, but can't always get the concepts in the books that she wants to read at that level. Graphic novels can present challenges to storytelling. They can make storytelling easier or harder. They appeal to so many. And, you know, the point here about not giving a book to somebody because they're a boy or a girl, it's a whole lot easier to have that attitude when you have books that appeal to both boys and girls to choose from, which we didn't have when I was a kid. When we were as a kid, you talked about the types of things that we had for teen lit back then, and I'm sitting here cringing because everything you mentioned is something I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. Babysitter's Club? The 12-year-old boy? Well, Goosebumps. Come yeah, on. But Goosebumps were such a soft version of Gothic. When I read Gothic, I read Stephen King. Or I read, nowadays, it's Jonathan Stroud, and I think that's a much better choice than R.L. Stein. R.L. Stein produced a lot of stuff, but not really great. Yeah. Not really great Gothic.
Do you want to jump in, Erin?
I like to jump in on graphic novels because the graphic novel collection is getting bigger and bigger. And there's something, as Michael said, for everyone. This is not just comic books. It's a format. The graphic novel is a format. And you're going to find March by John Lewis, which is about the civil rights. You're going to find Giant Days, which is like a new adult book about going to college. You're going to find My Friend Dahmer by Vic Cerf, which is about Jeffrey Dahmer. He grew up with him, and it's a story about just how he was at school as a kid. And you know,
wow, that's pretty dark.
Oh, it was. And it's a great graphic novel. He doesn't go much into the graphic and, you know, aspects of the killing. Actually, that's where the story pretty much stops. This is all about his backstory and what he was like as a kid. So, you know, there's a lot in the graphic novel collection that is not just, you know, I read all the Calvin and Hobbes books. It's not just Calvin and Hobbes, although that's still a great thing to read.
Well, there's a lot of cultural commentary in
right.
Calvin and Hobbes and Foxtrot and so forth. I actually just want to give a shout out to the Nathan Hale graphic novel series. I have learned, those have come home, and I have learned a ton that I didn't know about American history through those Nathan Hale graphic novels, which are excellent, and I keep waiting for him to put out more. So, Nathan Hale, if you're listening, go ahead and put some more out there for us because they're terrific. Let's go back to our listeners. Again, the question we're examining today in the exchange, do teens read today? And if so, what and how? 1-800-892-6477. Maureen's calling from New Boston. Hi, Maureen. Go ahead. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
Fine. Go ahead, Maureen.
About how kids are reading on the internet and reading blogs, but I think a huge genre is the fan fiction, because not only are the kids reading that, but they're writing, and they're taking the author's work to a whole new level with their own ideas. And I know my own son spends a tremendous amount of time writing and reading other teens' work on the internet.
Yeah.
So I just didn't.
Sure, and Maureen, absolutely. And, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about fan fiction, but for those who didn't catch that part of the show, you know, go ahead, Michael, just talk about how important that is and how that is kind of a new development. When I was a teenager, you know, the author was the author and I'm the teen and, you know, I don't pretend to write for them.
Yeah, it's one of the truths that kids growing up think that Martians write books and they fall from the sky. I think it's very important that kids know that real people write books, that they can write books, and that they don't have to wait until they're 30 years old to do it. Going around doing author visits, having written children's books, here in New England, we have a rich opportunity that nobody else has, and that is you can't kick over a rock in New England without finding a published author. I mean, they're everywhere, and we have them in our schools, in our libraries. I was out in Nebraska, and I asked this entire high school that I was talking to, how many of you have met an author before, and not a single kid raised their hand. You got to take advantage of it, and you got to get those kids writing.
Well, and the schools do a good job of bringing these authors in. On the other hand, I guess it's not that hard since they all live here anyway. Go ahead, Nancy.
I just wanted to mention a local author, Paul Durham, who has written a series of books called Luck Uglies. It's a series. And we brought him into our school, and the kids are just absolutely obsessed with these authors. They get to meet them. They get to realize that they're real people. And I love bringing authors in because I think it's important that kids know that they're real people and they have real lives. And a couple of months ago, we brought in Marie Lu, who wrote a wonderful series of books that the kids loved. She's in her second series now. And they found out she got her start writing games. And forget about it from there on. You know, they were just all over her. Yeah.
Well, and on your website, Erin, and we'll put a link on our website, nhpr.org/exchange, you know, you not only encourage kids to read, you have these, you know, splashy videos about your summer reading program at the library, but you also connect teenagers with other New Hampshire authors so they can go, oh, I didn't know about that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And when I visit schools, I do the same thing. You know, we talk about writing and publishing. And then for Dairy Author Fest, which is where I do primarily bring in a bunch of authors to the Dairy Public Library. It's a free event. It's wonderful. Happens once a year. We bring in a bunch of local people. Audie Rule comes and Paul Durham has been a visitor before. Erin Bowman, she wrote Vengeance Road and the Taken trilogy. She's somewhere in New Hampshire.
She's in Bow.
So there are a lot of authors around us, and at the library, I do try to bring a bunch in just to answer publishing questions because the kids are very creative and they are creating their own works. And it's great to know, you know, if you want to pursue this, what those next steps look like.
So if teenagers today have more of a personal connection to the authors, there's an advantage to actually meeting that person face-to-face. Go ahead, Nancy. Yeah.
We had Erin Bowman come in and do a writer's workshop for our kids. And her first question was, how many of you have written a book? And just about every child raised their
hand.
Really? Yeah. They've all written. They love working with a published author on working on their books. And kids are writing as well as reading.
Let's take another call. And this is John in Portsmouth. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
So just a couple of comments. Just wanted to touch on the Kindle versus paper. I got my niece a Kindle and first loved it. Now she'd just rather read on paper and hard copy. But I look at it kind of either way. She's reading, so that's great. But an interesting sort of scenario that we watched happen with her, and she goes to school in the Midwest, not out here, but she loves computers and got into Minecraft and started reading more books about Minecraft, whether it was strategy, and now there's actually fiction related to Minecraft that has spun out of that. And she had asked for Minecraft books for Christmas last year, and my mom, her grandmother, encouraged her to look for other books because she didn't think Minecraft was appropriate because, you know, girls and computers. It was really came down to that, which I know is a whole separate topic.
Yeah.
But
wow.
She tried to do a book report at school about a Minecraft book that she was reading. And the teacher also encouraged her to find a different book that was more, I don't know if you'd say more
traditional,
literary.
Advanced,
literary,
yeah,
right?
You know, something that was more of like, yeah, something that maybe had a little bit more, you know, literal value, I suppose, something in that regard. It was interesting, and I'm sure it had a little bit to do with the computer thing, but here she's trying to read and she's trying to get interested in topics she's focused on and being told to do other things because it, you know, whether it's a, you know, a gender thing or, you know, they don't see merit in those kind of books compared
to well,
know,
John,
like Harry Potter or whatnot. So it that was interesting to me that she's trying to read and being told or tried to steer in a different direction.
Right. I'm so glad you called, John, and I don't know if you caught the show earlier, but this is what you talked about right at the beginning, Michael. Don't put people in categories of, you know, good book, bad book, boy, girl, good reader, bad reader, whatever.
Yeah, because you can make a list of the types of reading that kids have been told they can't do for reasons that often the adults can't even really explain, as you just showed us. You know, we don't know why, but that's just not it. Sports books get no respect. Books about computers. World of Warcraft spawned a number of fiction books, the first of which was published only inside the game. And you had to go into the game to read it. And then eventually it came out into the world. And, you know, there's just no reason to cut a kid off from wanting to read something if they're excited about it.
And John, I'm so glad you called. Everybody in the studio, I want you to know, is just shaking their heads. So maybe you can get your mom to listen to the program. Let's take another call. This is Noah in Londonderry. Hi, Noah. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi.
Go ahead, Noah.
All right. So you guys were just talking about the impact of graphic novels.
Yep.
So have any of you ever heard of the webcomic Homestuck?
Hmm. Homestuck.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
No.
Word.
Okay, so it's appealing to you, Noah?
Yeah, so I read it personally. It's eight years old.
Yeah.
And it's a webcomic, though it incorporates, like, pictures, GIFs, videos, flashes. And it had wide appeal to teens for a long time, to the point where people would go to cons and a wide majority of them would be dressed as Homestuck characters.
Right, right.
Wow. And how old are you, know, if I can ask?
18.
Okay. Well, it's great that you call because you're exactly the person that we're talking about today. So this is pretty popular with teenagers and college students. Do you know anything more about this?
I don't. Erin? I haven't read Homestuck. I'm sure I'm going to get back to the library and Liz is going to kick me because I'm sure she's read it. she reads a lot more webcomics than me. So I'll definitely check it out. It sounds really interesting. And, you know, I'm going to check it out and see if I can.
Well, and I love what he talked about because it kind of incorporates what we've been talking about. Just because somebody isn't sitting down with, you know, Nancy Drew or the Hardy Boys or whatever, you know, War and Peace or the Iliad, you know, there's this new type of reading. He's reading online. It's a graphic novel. It incorporates video and other, you know, techie elements, for lack of a better word, but he's reading. It's got characters. It's got a plot. I mean, so don't be judgy.
Yeah, and what's interesting about it is it's showing an evolution of storytelling, which is what maybe is more of the future of storytelling, is more on the web, more inclusion of both story and video, and yeah, it's cool.
Michael, you want to jump in on that?
Oh, I was just thinking about the different formats and reminding myself we have to at some point mention audiobooks,
right.
Because talking about a different format of storytelling, all the research says that listening to formal language read out loud does just as much for you as reading it yourself, and you can do it for many more hours. Nowadays, that's maybe what you really should be doing on your phone, is downloading those books. You can do it for free. Have your New Hampshire library card, and you can get on and do this and have those audiobooks at your disposal. And it's just like being read to, which everybody loves.
Here's an email that came in from Amy, who says, "My young adult boy does not enjoy reading and as a result is doing poorly in reading-related classes. And don't even get me started," Amy says, "on his grammar, spelling, or sentence structure." Amy says, is there a summer class designed to help students who are behind in writing, grammar, and reading level? And Amy, I don't know, she doesn't have what town she's in, so I don't think we can answer her specific question. But this gets to a broader question that I did want to ask all of you. And that is, and maybe you first, Nancy, you know, you all talked about the importance of reading for pleasure. Why does it matter? I mean, if a kid is doing well in school and he or she seems happy and doing fine, why does it matter if teens read or not? Who cares?
I care. I think it really absolutely does matter. When I think about the number of times a day that I say, oh, I know that because I read it in a fiction book, or, oh, I didn't know that as I'm reading different historical fiction or whatever, expanded, your whole knowledge is expanded. And when I have kids that come in and say, I'm not a good reader, I don't like to read, I said, do you play sports? Okay. Would you go to a soccer game without having practiced? You have the drills, you need the rules, you need all of that to be a good soccer player. Isn't that true of reading? The more you read, the better reader you get to be, and the more you understand the information that you're getting. So even if you're reading for pleasure, you're learning.
So, and again, Amy, we can't answer your question specifically about a summer class because we don't know your community, but I do wonder, Erin, libraries don't just have summer reading programs for kids. They do it for teenagers. How do you pull in the older kids, though? Because, for the little kids, it's easy. There's incentives, and
right,
it's fun, and they go with, mom or dad, and so forth.
We do have a summer reading challenge, and we do have a writer's group. So I would suggest definitely seeing if he would be willing to go to a writer's group, because it's not school. It's about the cool story that you're reading, and you read it to peers, and they're like, oh, that's really cool. I loved what you did there. And I think that's really important to have the stress of getting every little thing right in the piece off. Just take it away. If you have the permission to fail, often you can do really well. So writer's group is a great thing. We're doing Choose Your Own Adventures this summer. You write your own Choose Your Own Adventure. And for other programming, we're also doing an Eco Resource Club, a Social Justice Book Club, a digital art class, and some recycled art projects. So we have a lot going on that should appeal to teens. And we do incentives still. They're just slightly different prizes. So things like mugs and journals and, that Canobie Lake Park tickets.
Okay, that would be an incentive for sure. Well, and we'll put lots of resources and names of books and events going on our website, Amy. So I hope that's helpful. It's nhpr.org/exchange. Look back a little bit later. Give us a chance to put the names of some of the books we mentioned this hour up there. But thank you for the email. And all of you, this has been great. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.